Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
A republic endures because of the wisdom of our Constitution, enshrined in three co-equal branches of government, serving as checks and balances on each other. The actions taken to date by the President have seriously violated the Constitution, especially when the President says, Article 2 says I can do whatever I want. For the past several months, we have been investigating in our committees and litigating in the courts, so the House can gather all the relevant facts and consider whether to exercise its full Article I powers, including a constitutional power of the utmost gravity, approval of articles of impeachment. And this week, the President has admitted to asking the President of Ukraine to take actions which would benefit him politically. The actions of the Trump presidency revealed dishonorable fact of the President's betrayal of his oath of office, betrayal of our national security, and betrayal of the integrity of our elections. Therefore, today, I'm announcing the House of Representatives moving forward with an official impeachment inquiry. I'm directing our six committees to proceed with their investigations under that umbrella of impeachment inquiry. The President must be held accountable. No one is above the law.
Well, folks, that sounds like impeachment to me. Welcome to the Michael Steele podcast. I'm Michael Steele. This has been a hell of a week, and it's only, what, Thursday? It's crazy. It is just absolutely crazy. Okay, let's just get the particulars out of the way. You know you can find us on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, wherever you get the podcasts on. You're going to want to download this one for sure, because we got some smart people on to help us understand exactly what's going on. The Dems have launched impeachment. It's absolutely amazing that how that worm has turned. But then wait, there's more. A whistleblower has exposed the President of the United States having a conversation with the President of Ukraine that was, how shall we say, slightly inappropriate. That has turned Republicans on their heads, twisting them into knots. Democrats, again, more fodder for impeachment. And the acting DNI, McGuire, is on Capitol Hill before the Senate the House Intelligence Committee, trying his best not to get further caught up in this mess. To help us kind of figure out what the hell is going on is Philip Mudd. He's the former deputy director of the CIA's Counterterrorist Center and the FBI's National Security Branch. I don't get a chance to appear with him on MSNBC because he's over at CNN, but it's all good. We're all in the same boat. He's a commentator at CNN, and he lectures around the world on national security methodologies for understanding difficult analytic problems. You think we got the right guy for this conversation? He is also the author of Black Site, the CIA in the Post-9/11 World. Pick it up. It is a good read. It's a very good read. I hope we get to talk a little bit about that today. Philip, welcome to the podcast, man.
Well, you said it was all good. You didn't ask me if it's all good. I mean, competition, it's not all good. It's going to go ugly early. It's already gone ugly early, I guess, if you look at what happened on the Hill.
Well, let's just start there. This is ugly. And folks, you know me. I can be the hardcore partisan when I need to and do all that stuff. We want to keep this as top level because I respect this gentleman and the service that he's given to the country. So we're not going to, Phil, put you in a position where you have to play the DNR game. What I appreciate about having you on, particularly as the timing has worked out, is to give us some context of the serious nature of the allegations that were set forth in the whistleblower's complaint. and how this has really put acting director, DNI director McGuire in a very ticklish spot, as we could tell. And we'll play a couple of clips from the hearing today. Even he acknowledging that this is unusual. This is unprecedented. How do guys like you see this right now? And how difficult is this for the administration?
Well, I you know, I've been trying to noodle through this because the story is moving so fast. If you remember, the Russia story moved like a paint drying, but this story changes hours. So, I think, and I did 25 years of service. One of the advantages you get with experience is hopefully applying that experience and say, okay, can I boil this down? And I boil this down and say, I don't know why McGuire, the acting DNI, is on the hot seat so much. If you read through, and I did a couple times today, the whistleblower statement, it's not an intelligent story.
Right.
It has little to do with the intelligence community, except for the fact that it was written by someone who is part of the intelligence community. Somebody today is reporting that this is a CIA officer, although I don't know that for a fact. It's a story of political corruption or allegations of political corruption. So I suspect if you get the whistleblower in there, very quickly the intelligence guys fall to the wayside. This is a story of whether White House officials were aware of what the president did. Now they tried to cover up. The last thing I'd say is I don't think the whistleblower comes out looking bad. I would if I thought this were a borderline issue. But when you read the transcript of the call and the whistleblower statement today, I'm not saying this is an impeachable offense. I'm saying it's certainly worth a national security conversation about the president's actions. And it's hard for me. I don't think that's really a partisan statement. This is really something unusual the president's done that the Congress should look at.
Well, I think, it is unusual. I mean, there's no doubt that this is sort of an unprecedented thing to have happen. But we, in one sense, I sort of step back from it and say, why are a lot of people running around acting shocked and surprised that we're here? I totally get it on the Republican side why they're behaving where they behave, because they know it's all true. They know what the hell's going on. I know what's going on inside. I've talked to enough of them to know that this president cuts the corners that he should never cut. And he puts his people in a position where, as was evidenced in the complaint, they then have to go out and clean things up. I mean, you've got, ambassadors involved in this. You've got presidents of foreign governments involved in this. So it really sets an interesting, it's not a precedent so much, but it sets an interesting note. And so when you're looking at it from an intelligence, and I love the way you put that, I think it's right, that this is not really an intelligence problem as it is a political corruption problem, as it is a potential bribery problem, and things like that. But yet here and still, the public is perceiving this in the first instance as an intelligence issue. And do you think that the way the DNI has kind of handled that and responded to the complaint so far contextualizes it that way to say, look, we did what we had to do to the extent that it was brought to us and it was under my purview, but this goes beyond my pay grade, essentially?
No, I think that's dead on. The issues are going to be moving forward. What the testimony is, for example, of U.S. officials who traveled to Ukraine, when they went to talk to the Ukrainians, were they carrying a message that said, there's a chance that the money, defense assistance, will be released if you do what the president asked on the Biden investigation? If they say that, this case gets, it's pretty much case closed. I'm
right.
Not saying again, in terms of an action that is simply unacceptable. And I would argue everybody in Congress ought to stand up and say, you can't do this. I do think that it's right for the intel guys to say, look, we're out of this, except for creating an opportunity for the whistleblower to speak. I would say, and I caught a fair amount of heat for this last week, I do not think it is the intelligence community's job to report to the Congress on political corruption. I do think it was the right thing for the DNI to say, you can't have every agency in government,
right,
Department of Labor, to go to the Congress independently and say, we have our own perception of what political corruption is. It should go through a channel, whether it's the White House counsel or whether it's the ethics czar. There should be a standard process. This is so weird. to report this, but that's sort of an arcane issue. We're going to end up with congressional hearings that that move away from intelligence really fast.
No, I think we are. So I'm going to keep you in a little bit of hot water here, since you brought that point up.
What?
Yeah, you're probably used to it by now. You're a CIA guy. You know, your level of hot water, trust me, folks, we couldn't stomach it, I know. But so on that point, I mean, I get it. I get it, Philip, that in the main, a CIA operative in the field, someone who's working in during the normal course, comes across this, you know, this kind of information. Yeah, it's not within their purview necessarily. But this is a little bit different. This is, I mean, wouldn't you, and I think the question was even asked of the DNI today in the hearing, wouldn't you want to know? Wouldn't you want to put into the knowledge of your superiors that you've come across information that that someone as high as the President of the United States may be engaged in an activity that is problematic on two fronts? One, there's maybe a legal problem, but two, that we have a national security problem in that he is having this conversation with the head of another state. You're saying it doesn't really reach that level?
No, unfortunately for your show, I'm saying something really boring. So as soon as I answer, I suspect you're going to want to move to another subject. I think what the whistleblower did was right.
Okay.
And I'm proud that it's a CIA officer because I was an analyst by training. It's very well written. I'm just glad there are no misspellings in there.
All right.
I think it's not only right, but it's, someone had to report this. As a former insider, my mundane question was simply, in this weird world, what is the proper mechanism to report this? Is it direct communication from the DNI to the Congress saying, I've seen political corruption? Or should he appropriately go to people like the White House counsel and the Department of Justice and say, this isn't really an intelligence matter. Can we have a conversation about the right way for me to provide something that's not really in my wheelhouse?
Gotcha.
I'm glad it got to the Congress.
Gotcha.
It's just a mundane inside baseball question of how it happened.
Well, and you know, but that mundane inside baseball question is going to be very important to the overall flow of this conversation that you're right. It's going to get in front of the House in a bigger way. They're going to have now it's an integrated part of the other hearings that are going on. And I think in some respects, it sort of puts the nail in the definitive coffin for impeachment, because remember what Nancy basically announced was, hey, we're going to look at the possibility of impeachment, and we're going to have these six committees continue to do their work. I think this story creates the narrative that puts us much more on a direct path towards official filing of impeachment charges by one of the House committees, probably intelligence or something like that. That sets this thing in motion. So let's look at the complaint itself, and I'd love to get your take on an angle that a lot of Republicans today are sort of rolling out in their talking points. And mind you, folks, just as you recall, I am a Republican, and I think the way my party is handling a lot of this stuff is worse than possible. I mean, I just don't understand why we just can't be honest about the very facts and the information that we see. But now we're insisting that, oh, well, this is information that was obtained by someone who wasn't in the room. And that, you know, that means it's all secondhand and therefore it's irrelevant and it's probably fraught with lies. In fact, the complainant in their letter note, in the course of my official duties, I have received information from multiple U.S. government officials that the President of the United States is using the power of his office to solicit interference from a foreign country in the 2020 U.S. elections, end quote. So he acknowledges, or she acknowledges up front, look, I got this information from people who were in the room. And so he's got all these verifiable sources, including the president's personal lawyer, Mr. Rudolph Giuliani, who we are overtly seeing his behavior. We have the attorney general that these people refer to as part of this process. And you have folks who were on the call listening to this conversation. How credible is that from your estimation in terms of the credibility of this informant, not informant, but this whistleblower?
But it's that you read as an intel professional, you raised something really interesting. One of the things I learned after years and years in the business was to flip the problem on its head. So let's say you find out 10 years later in 2029 that there was an official who heard a U.S. government official who heard a handful or more of his or her colleagues talking about a level of presidential corruption that is. And I read that memorandum this morning. I'm not surprised too often. It was worse than I expected. I expected to see sort of a mirror of the transcript. It is far worse than that. But my point is, if you heard that 10 years down the road and you heard that was never reported, I think you'd say that wasn't reported, despite the fact that this person wasn't in the room. There are a handful or more of individuals who were there who spoke to him firsthand. How could you not report that? So I've seen Republicans today. I think they're making a mistake. If I were the Democrats, and I can play both sides since I'm not on either one, I would say, of course you're right that this is secondhand. Therefore, that makes it all the more immediate that we should hear from the individuals who are actually named in the report. Let's go.
I was going to say, for me, I look at it, and you may let me know if I'm stretching here. All right, so I'm willing to get, clap back on this if I'm going too far in my analogy. But I kind of looked at this as I listened to more and more people start this mantra, this new narrative, because they got to come up with something, because the evidence from the first document, which was sort of the TikTok of the phone conversation, and then, of course, what the complainant put out today, that's damning stuff. I mean, it's like kick you in the nuts. Oh, bend over, you're in trouble kind of situation. But I looked at it when they started this conversation about, it's secondhand information. He wasn't in the room. How is this whistleblower any different from a police officer or other official who is conveyed information who weren't at the scene of the crime? But people who were there were like, let me tell you what happened. let me tell you what Joe did, what Mary said, and why there's a body on the floor. Now, the cops weren't there. The cops then get that information and they pass it where it needs to go. In this case, they would pass it on to the DA. The whistleblower passed it on to the appropriate officials who could legally, constitutionally deal with this. So that person who is sitting there and particularly given the fact that what they have complained of is exactly what the White House released. That to your point about why it was so damaging what the White House released in the first instance, because guess what? It has now been verified and backed up by the complainant. So I don't understand how that's any different. And you wouldn't dismiss that witness, that person who was told the information, quote, secondhand, because they were in an authoritative position to receive that information.
It's interesting you raise this. I'm going to take you inside the intelligence business for a bit, because when I read the document, there's a lot in there that reflects the training of an intelligence officer who's looking at a complex problem. Let me give you a couple of a little bit of intel speak for a moment to your point of why you would believe someone who has secondhand information. If you had only a single source in the intel business, you call that single threaded. That is, one person heard this. That's suspicious. If you get my old world was counterterrorism. If you get information from a source who heard it from someone in the room and there's only a single thread, you step back and say, we need corroboration. So what the person who's writing this, who again, evidently is a trained intelligence analyst, is saying, there is corroborating information from multiple sources. This is not single-threaded. And if you look at the context, for example, the president's comment to George Stephanopoulos, yes, I would take dirt from a, right. Even after the Russian, yes, I would take dirt. What the analyst is saying is, I understand the vulnerability of secondhand information, but I have a lot of corroboration here. And that corroboration includes both what I heard, but also what the president and his advisors had said. The second and final thing I'd say is, you'll note that the way the document is drafted meets an old intelligence standard that we learned, especially after the Iraq War. That is, ensure that you understand the difference between what you think and what you know. Mm-hmm. The drafter doesn't say he knows that the president held back aid.
Aid, right.
for Biden. He just says, this is what I saw. And so therefore, the people who have the power to determine whether what I saw reaches the level of evidence have to investigate this. I didn't investigate it. They have to get over the bar of, I now know the president did something corrupt. He's just reporting what he saw and heard. It's a very interesting intelligence document, aside from the political piece.
Yeah, it is. And I don't, you know, I don't pretend to know how your world kind of pulls all these pieces together. But the one thing that all of this reeked to me was legitimacy. I've seen enough of these documents, having kind of grown up in this system, and talked to a lot of very smart guys like yourself over the years, to get a sense of when, you know, the evidence is kind of being propped up by wishful thinking, which is why the president started almost out of the gate with the partisan angle. Oh, well, this person's a partisan. They supported Hillary Clinton or they supported the Democrats. A, how would you know that? B, there's no evidence of that from anything that this person has written or what has been reported about this individual. And certainly when the DNI was asked that question, said, absolutely have no clue what this person's. I know, you know, I don't even know who it is. So how would I know whether or not they were a partisan and all of this, all of those things? So you have this sense of real authenticity with the documents that have come out. And I'm still not even convinced that we got all from the White House that's actually there. I think there were probably more because, you know, it was a 30-minute phone call and we had, what, 2 pages of transcript?
Well, yeah, simple question would be, among the people who are named in the memorandum, are there, for example, emails that relate to not just the phone call, but to their visits to Ukraine?
Right.
I mean, the memo drafter has the president's taking a risk here in that they're going to go after, and he has today calling the memo drafter a traitor, which is just ridiculous. But they're trying to go, it's the classic ad hominem, if you can't fight the argument, fight the person making the argument. As soon as someone who was sent by the president to Ukraine confirms some of the reporting, you start to say, well, what does this have to do with the memo drafter? Mm. The memo drafter supported the facts, and the facts are good. There's so many people named in that memo. We're going to know fairly soon whether those facts are corroborated. But by the way, just aside, some of this I find incredibly boring. What are we getting here? We're getting, this is a hoax by partisans. That sounds like Mueller.
Right.
The guy, I suppose, the guy as opposed to Hillary Clinton, actually did worse stuff than I did, lock him up. I'm like, right. The playbook has like 2 pages.
Yep, that's, you just partisans. Summed it up, baby. That's it.
It's like I'm waiting for the lock him up chance.
Lock him up. No collusion, no corruption. Lock him up. Yeah. Yeah, no, they'll go down that road. So let me ask you, what do you make of the effort by the White House to restrict access to the records of that phone call? In fact, to take the recording of it and the documentation of it and put it on a completely super secret inside the, you know, basement under the floorboard kind of server. If you got to do all that, that tells me you hiding something.
Well, let me give you, and to go back into the old intelligence practice of ensuring that you don't make that fatal mistake of confusing what you think with what you know, I'll tell you what I think is going on, but I don't know it. The quick question would be, how many conversations between the president and foreign leaders went through that filing process? My guess is zero. I mean, if there are 100, I'd say, okay, this is a non-story. I'm guessing this is like the only one. Having served at the White House, at the National Security Council, I was in that intelligence office, where I presume it's the same office today. I was there almost 20 years ago under George Bush, but the people storing that, the office that stored that document, the same office I used to work with 20 years ago. What that's supposed to store is stuff like, if you're going to the president with top secret information about an informant in the Kremlin, you got to have a special storage locker, but also a standalone computer. So if you're printing the document, it cannot be accessible from the outside. It's just a desktop or a laptop that is not connected to any outside source. So that's what the storage thing they're using is for. It's supposed to be for the most sensitive intelligence that you can't have access by any outside computer, and the only piece of paper sits in one office. And as you're saying, somebody then said, well, now we're going to put the record of a presidential phone call into that intel locker. I'm like, when I read that, I'm like, that's weird. That's weird.
Yeah.
Somebody's going to have to answer why they did that and how often they've done it in the past.
Yeah, and can we now pull that information off of that server, out of that locker, and make it available to the investigating committees and ultimately publicly, you know, public, unless, again, there are national security implications for doing otherwise. I think you're absolutely right. I mean, you've got to go there. The other part of in reading through the complaint that I thought was pretty interesting, the way this whole thing comes about with the Bidens, and particularly, you know, the president's, the vice president's son, and how the how they latched onto that, how the president latched onto that as sort of his way. It's like, okay, Biden's going to be a problem for me. I heard, you know, his son has this relationship with this Ukrainian mining company. Let's get into that. What do you think about that? Is there legitimacy in that concern, whether from Trump or from others, about the activities of Joe Biden and his son, Hunter, at this point?
You know, I'd have a – I served at the FBI under the Department of Justice as well as at the CIA. I'd have a couple of simple questions. One is a government question and one is a political question. If you're worried about corruption from a U.S. citizen, it happens to be among 330 million U.S. citizens. It happens to be the son of your rival. That's a little bit statistically odd, but if you're honestly – think he is. If you want to claim that you're worried about corruption by an American citizen, typically you would go to the Department of Justice, white collar crime, and say, open a case. Now, the president should not be, no president and no member of Congress should be in the business of telling the Justice Department when to open a case.
Right.
So you're starting off on a premise. I'd say the White House should never call the Department of Justice. It sounds like politicians are deciding that the rival should be under investigation. But if you thought there was legitimate, if you had facts that said the son of the vice president was involved in corruption, you don't ask the Ukrainians to investigate. You ask your Department of Justice to investigate a U.S. citizen. And the second thing I'd say, half tongue in cheek, is if you're so worried about corruption in Ukraine, did you ever pick up the phone to ask the Ukrainians to help on the Manafort case, which was opened by the Department of Justice, which was a corruption case, which did involve Ukraine, and which ended in a judge and jury saying Paul Manafort's corrupt. I don't think there's a single phone call where you can have the president saying, hey, there's a real justice issue here with Paul Manafort. Can we ensure we get the facts from Ukraine? Why did that not happen? I mean, this is kind of a joke.
Yeah, and it kind of opens up the other door I want to get into, go through with you, and that is Attorney General Barr. And before I do that, I want to play a clip from the acting DNI McGuire from the hearing just this morning. Sort of give us sort of a quick soundbite on his take of things.
I appreciate that in the past, whistleblower complaints may have been provided to Congress, regardless of whether they were deemed credible or satisfied the urgent concern requirement. However, I am not familiar with any prior instances where a whistleblower complaint touched on such complicated and sensitive issues, including executive privilege.
And what makes that complicated and sensitive for a lot of Americans is the role that seems to be emerging between or by Rudy Giuliani, the president's a lawyer, and Attorney General Barr, and how these two figures have, I think, probably will play a much bigger role in this conversation and certainly in the investigation than a lot of people think. The president, when asked about this, all of this, had pretty much Donald Trump response. Let's listen to what he had to say.
Hello, everybody. I just watched a little bit of this on television. It's a disgrace to our country. It's another witch hunt. Here we go again. It's Adam Schiff and his crew making up stories and sitting there like pious, whatever you want to call them. It's just a disgrace. It's a terrible thing for our country.
So you got the president saying this is terrible, it's a disgrace, they're making stuff up. You've got the DNI going, I ain't never seen anything like this before. This is the wildest thing in the world. What do you see happening? What should the House committees that are going to be pursuing all this impeachment conversation and making all these inquiries, what do they need to focus on from the whistleblower complaint? So that this doesn't become another Mueller investigation hot mess where you got Barr defining the evidence before the public gets to see it for what it is. The president a year long, no collusion, corruption, da da ba bum. How should they approach this?
I think the lesson from the last round is be focused, move quickly, don't suffer from mission creep, and also from the Lewandowski hearing, make sure you bring people up there who aside from the sort of the fireworks at the Lewandowski hearing, it's not clear to me how much he knew. Why you start with him in hearings, I don't really know.
Right.
I'd focus on a couple of basic questions and move fast with witnesses. Don't do peripheral witnesses. You need to get some ammo quickly if you're on the Democrats. Or better said, you need to understand quickly whether there's fire where we see smoke.
Right.
And that has a couple of characteristics. I want to know from U.S. government officials, and this includes defense, state, and the White House, why was aid restricted and why was it restored? That's it. And the second question I need to know is for U.S. government officials, plus Rudy Giuliani, I want to know when there are conversations with the Ukrainians outside the phone call, whether there are linkages between the Biden investigation and U.S. assistance. Mm. And the people named in the memo, plus officials at State and Defense who were involved in U.S. assistance to Ukraine. One of the advantages, if you're looking at this and hoping not to have the agony of the Russian investigation, is you probably got, a dozen witnesses at most who can at least get you to know how important this is.
Right.
And it's a fairly narrow issue over a fairly short period of time. So the investigation is a lot more straightforward.
You know what I find amusing right now is how folks are trying slowly but surely to throw Mike Pompeo, Secretary of State Pompeo, a little bit under the bus. It's just like Giuliani went on Fox News the other night. He was like, the first time I even was thinking about doing anything for Ukraine is when the State Department called me and asked me to. And I was like, wait a minute, hold up. What? You're not a diplomat, number one. Why would the State Department, why would Mike Pompeo call you of all people to go and be a, quote, envoy for the president of the United States on something like this?
I can't believe that. I can't believe Pompeo said, let me get somebody. I mean, Pompeo has absorbed so much foreign policy power. Let me get somebody who's outside my chain of command who I don't control, exactly, who usurped the power of the Department of State and the Secretary of State. And by the way, I gather Giuliani today is saying, I don't really know anything, man.
Right, right.
He better not say gross. The information in the document is so precise. It's hard to imagine somebody just sat down with a couple of beers and said, I want to make this up.
Yeah, it's beyond believable at this point. So I before I let you get out of here, I want to connect the next piece here, and that's your book, Black Site, the CIA in the Post 9/11 World. Great read. Highly recommend you pick it up, folks, if you want to get some real understanding of the landscape, the new landscape that we find ourselves in, which has actually got a little bit of the old landscape still part of the narrative. But if the president were willing to read a book, what would the president learn from yours?
I tell you, there is one parallel. One of the reasons I wrote the book, which is the story of how the CIA got into and out of the interrogation business, right. I talked to a bunch of my friends and colleagues, about 35 of them, about the difficult decisions of a tense time. And one of the messages you bring away, it's not a defense of the interrogation program or the black site that is a secret detention facilities. It's an explanation. And you come away saying, in the most intense of times, you better have experience, leadership, judgment, temperament that can sit down and say, what do we want to do? What are the implications 10 years down the road? Where are we vulnerable? You're going to get caught up in the machinations of CNN and MSNBC talking every hour about breaking news. You've got to step back and say, what's the right thing to do in the moment? And you need people with some experience, judgment, character to do that.
Damn. You want to run for president?
The chance that I will do that, I'm like John Boehner. I have a bit of a red wine habit.
Oh, there you go. You know what I mean? Hey,
didn't he say once that he didn't want to give up smoking and red wine or something?
Yeah, no, he's hardcore. Boehner's hardcore. He doesn't play. He's out there doing his thing and enjoying it. Folks, it's Philip Mudd. He is the former deputy director of the CIA's Counterterrorist Center and the FBI's National Security Branch. All around smart guy on all of this stuff. So glad he could take the time to come and give us some further understanding of what we're looking at, what we're hearing and seeing going on right now whistleblower saga unfolds, and more of how this behavior has conducted both personal and foreign policy on behalf of the country is exposed. The book is Black Site, the CIA in the Post 9/11 World. Philip, thanks so much, man, for coming on. Really appreciate you.
Thanks for having me. That was almost fun, which is unheard of.
Spoken like a true CIA guy, right? I appreciate you, man. So, folks, don't forget you can catch us on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, wherever you get your podcast on. Tune in and tune us. Turn it down for us. Just download it. That's all you got to do. You can find me on Twitter at Michael Steele. All right, folks, we'll catch y'all next time. Peace, love, and counterintelligence. Later.
Into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Sally from finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.